Hi, I'm Tracy, the host of Sexy Aging, and I've had this podcast topic on my list of things to know for the longest time. It was a pleasure to interview Jennifer Chesick, a medical journalist, who has released her book, The Psilocybin Handbook for Women, this year. Here's a fun fact. Women report more frequent use of some psychedelics than men. And as you listen into this episode, it becomes apparent why. Jennifer shares her experience with microdosing and how this positively impacted her physical and mental health and even her relationships. During our interview, she explains how psychedelics work, safety, because we all want to know that, and why psychedelics might be a management tool for women in midlife and menopause. Black Friday, and you know I'm going to participate. If you are keen to finish the year strong with your fitness and you need that guidance, then there is $10 off the standalone programs in the Sexy Aging Fitness app. There is the 30-day Renew program, which has strength training for the gym and home, HIIT workouts, MBAC workouts, which is mobility, balance, agility, and core, as well as yoga recovery practices, and 30 days of lifestyle tips to manage your menopause symptoms. And for the complete beginner to exercise, there is the new 8-week complete beginner's workout program, which guides you through 25-minute bodyweight workouts and recommendations for other movement, as well as all the tips for a healthy lifestyle through menopause. $10 off each of these programs using the code, guess it, Black Friday. And if you haven't yet figured out what the actual is happening to your body as it goes through menopause, then jump onto my Menopause Management online course. It answers all the questions and guides you towards the light. There are micro lessons that you can do in your own time and PDF downloads to support healthy changes for life. 15% off with the code, let's say it together, Black Friday. Both of these deals expire Monday, the 27th of November, midnight. That's 2023. And I'll put the links in the show notes. So you can just click on the link. It'll take you straight to check out. Use your code. What is it? Black Friday. You wrote the book, Psilocybin Handbook for Women, How Magic Mushrooms, Psychedelic Therapy, and Microdosing Can Benefit Your Mental, Physical, and Spiritual Health. Super excited to talk about this topic. So welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to talk about it too.
So I guess we want to dial back a little bit and figure out where your journey took you to become a journalist and a writer, and your own personal experience with chronic pain. And I do believe that some of the people find their greatest purposes when they are in a place of pain. And I think that's obviously what's happened to you. So please share.
Absolutely. Well, yes, I've had chronic illness all my life, starting out with asthma, and then I also have endometriosis and menstrual migraine, and I have an autoimmune disorder. So I've been in the healthcare system my whole life. I was hospitalized a lot as a child, and just really always fascinated by health and wellness. So as a journalist, I eventually started focusing on health and wellness as a writer. And really, I love digging into medical studies and learning about complex conditions and what are the new treatments that we're learning about and things like that. So it's definitely a passion of mine. And I'm really passionate about women's health because often it seems like the mainstream medical system, especially in the United States where I live, leaves women's bodies sort of behind in the medical system. And I've had a lot of experience with that, especially as someone with endometriosis. So endometriosis is a condition that affects 1 in 10 people assigned female at birth. And occasionally it can affect men as well. However, that's very rare. So it's mostly something that affects women. And the disturbing statistic on this is that the National Institutes of Health here in the US designated less than 0.1% of its funding to study endometriosis in 2022. I don't know what the stats are for this year, but I doubt that it's any better. And so it's a really frustrating thing because it's a condition that, again, affects 1 in 10 people assigned female at birth, but it also takes on average 10 years to get a diagnosis for endometriosis. And so, you know, again, women just get left in the lurch. We get gaslighted when we're in chronic pain, and that's for other conditions as well. There are stats about all of this. Remember, I'm a fact checker. So, this is true that women get gaslighted. And I don't think we often recognize when it's happening, but, you know, a lot of times doctors tell us that chronic pain vaccine is in our heads. I've had that said to me before. I've had some really absurd things said to me in the doctor's office with people that I, you know, had formerly respected and no longer do. But that's not to say that I don't appreciate science and medicine. Obviously I do. It's my passion as a journalist, of course. But in terms of writing the book, so I had been researching a lot about psychedelics just in the journalism space, writing for different news outlets as we've kind of entered this.
Can I just interrupt? So
Go ahead.
We're going straight into the book, and I want, and you've mentioned that you were writing other publications or other articles for other publications. Personal experience? Just curious about your own personal experience with magic mushrooms and other.
Yeah, absolutely. So with magic mushrooms, I just did my first experience with them last year. I was always really nervous to try any type of psychedelic or I guess, quote unquote, illicit substance, because I was worried about what am I ingesting? What are going to be the side effects? What's going to happen to me? Am I in a space to be able to handle whatever occurs? And so I never had experience with it before, but really wanted to investigate it, explore it for myself to be able to properly write about it. I feel like that's such an important thing.
Okay, that's really where I'm going is like, what did you actually write the book first, or did you have an experience so that you could talk from experience as well? So this is interesting. Let's go.
I had the experience and then wrote the book because I really wanted to include that experience as my first chapter so that other people can gain insight into what actually happens during a psychedelic journey. Because I feel like we often have these visuals from TV or just movies where someone has done a magic mushroom trip, and it always seems so wacky.
Chaotic.
That's really what happens. Yeah, it seems really chaotic. It seems scary. Like, people often have a bad trip in fictional portrayals, and you know, that's not necessarily what's going to happen to you. So that was really important to me. So in terms of writing this book about that's really focused on women's health. So again, I had been researching psychedelics and writing about them in a journalism context, but also my passion is, of course, women's health. And so it seemed like a natural thing to bridge these two topics, psilocybin and women's health. And one thing that I learned that I found that was interesting was that more women report using some psychedelics more frequently than men do. And I was sort of surprised at that at first. It's something I write about in the introduction of the book, but I was surprised about that. But then when I dug a little deeper, I wasn't as surprised, because it turns out that women are using psychedelics mostly to self-treat conditions, whereas men often use them recreationally. And, you know, again, this isn't a surprise to me for some of the same reasons that I just talked about, in that women get gaslit at the doctor's office and we're not getting the care that we need for the conditions that are affecting us, whether that's endometriosis or menopause symptoms, which I know we're going to talk about, or really just anything, whether that's menstrual migraine, premenstrual dysphoric disorder, all of these conditions that disproportionately affect women, or only affect women, or affect them differently.
So are you happy to share what the experience was like for you? Obviously, you've got chronic pain, you've lived with it all your life, you are the 1 in 10 women diagnosed with endometriosis. Lucky you to have a diagnosis, but like you say, it takes years and years. I've interviewed other women on the podcast that have shared about their endometrial journey. So are you happy to share with us sort of what you experienced? I know it's in the book, but just a brief overview of did it actually help you?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm happy to talk about that. So the journey itself, I did 2 different days of a journey back to back. So my first psilocybin session was about a two gram dose, which is kind of a smaller dose. It's certainly not a microdose, but it's not a giant dose. It's kind of a medium. And so that night, I really had some cool experiences. It was a very profound experience. Initially, I was sort of like lying down on a mat with the eye mask over my face, and my practitioners were playing Tibetan singing bowls. So it was kind of a sound bath, which was really lovely. And really, it felt like a deep meditation, but I had some really cool things come up for me. One was that I could feel I almost like threads of light were connecting me to all the people that I know and love, and that I know love and care about me and support me back. I could feel that love sort of like surging like a current to my body, and my love going back to them. And that was a really cool thing.
Wow.
I think a lot of times, you know, we tend to know we have a support system out there, but to really feel that it's so true was so, again, so profound for me.
That's an incredible perspective, isn't it? Because yeah, you feel like you're on this journey by yourself. I mean, yes. You've got these people around you that you know that they love you on a day-to-day basis, but you feel like you're living in this box of pain, if you want to call it that, and they could not possibly understand what you're experiencing. And so to have that moment where you realize that they deeply want to understand or deeply really love and care for you no matter what you're going through, that's I think that's a checkbox right there.
yeah, it was so profound. It certainly brought me to happy tears, you know,
yeah.
And really a magical experience. Hence, it's called Magic Mushrooms. But yeah, the next day, I mean, I had some, you know, other insights come up that first night, but then I went deeper the next day. And the next day was, I did more of like a 3.5 grams, which would be closer to a larger dose. Certainly not a heroic dose. Some people take like 5 grams to really go deep, and I didn't do that. I plan to do that in the future.
Okay.
But the 3.5 grams was also really profound. I had several things come up. I've been dealing with some grief in my life. I had lost my beloved dog. He passed away about a year prior to my experience. And so I was really exploring that grief, and I found a lot of, relief or peace from that with the grief. And then same thing in terms of I had lost a couple of friends. One had died of a heroin overdose, and another had just kind of collapsed randomly from natural causes, but it's very sudden deaths that I was not prepared for at all. Not that we're ever really prepared to lose people in our lives, but the psilocybin journey really helped me kind of work through some of those things in a very magical and peaceful way. Like I wasn't overwhelmed with grief. I was just exploring that grief and enjoying some really happy memories and things like that. And then I went a little bit deeper into something that felt a little bit more, like a little scarier, I should say, and some anxiety came up, but it was because I really had to face something that gives me anxiety. And I think a lot of women are going through this right now, especially in middle age. And for context, I'm 44, so I'm sort of smack dab in middle age.
Yeah, let's go, Jennifer.
Yeah. So this was really, really interesting to me because I think so many people are going through this thing where eventually their parents will pass away, you know? And so my mom is 80, and my dad is just a little bit younger than her, so not too far behind. And so I know eventually in the near future, I will lose them both. And that's really been hard for me to face. I feel like it's going to be this never-ending, you know, experience of grief and just kind of a black hole that I'm going to fall into. But the psilocybin really kind of forced me to look at that and assess, why do I feel that way? Well, I mean, yes, I love my parents and, you know, losing them will be difficult, but why do I feel like I can't get through it?
Mm-hmm.
And essentially the psilocybin showed me that I can, and it's really hard to explain that. Again, I go into detail in the book, but it really showed me that I do have the tools to cope with difficult things. And part of it is that I have a really amazing support system that I can literally feel, you know, when I'm on psilocybin. And that's been lasting. That's been a feeling that's really lasted, is knowing that support system is there. But again, you know, it's something that we don't talk about enough in normal society, everyday society. We don't talk about this idea of losing people because we kind of shy away from talking about death. But I had to go through this sort of anxious experience during the journey. I sat with it, and that was a little difficult. But on the other side of that was like this immense peace and euphoria in knowing that I am a strong person and that I can get through a really difficult thing. Yes, it will be difficult, but I will be able to get through it. So that was maybe one of the most profound parts of my journey for sure.
Yeah, I think it's amazing. I've been thinking about, and I've listened to other podcast episodes around ayahuasca and the impact of that from a creator's perspective. And I kind of rate myself as quite a creative person. And so I'm really interested in how far can those sort of mind altering experiences, what can they bring you for the future? You know, like I'm quite interested in that. Like, how far can you actually go with your creativity, knowing that our brain is literally like an iceberg where you only, we're only using the top part, and there's so much underneath that we haven't tapped into. And these, you know, magic mushrooms, ayahuasca, gives you that opportunity to really go, you know, deeper down to the bottom of the iceberg. So it's on my bucket list, actually.
Yeah, I recommend it. Researchers have this great analogy to explain why psychedelics tend to have these, how we have these profound moments on psychedelics and how they can help with depression and PTSD and, and things like that. So I'm going to explain it briefly. It's called, so they have the, what's called the rebus model. And they've used this model to sort of describe what happened. So that rebus stands for relaxed beliefs under psychedelics. It's R-E-B-U-S. And what they're essentially saying, and I, and there is a really great analogy about this that is, makes it easier to understand, but what they're essentially saying is that our minds during normal states of consciousness are very rigid. And so if we were trying to get a new belief into our brains, and so specifically a belief about ourselves or about how the world operates, it's really hard to get that new belief in or to change your mind when it's so rigid like that. So when we're young, our minds are much more flexible or entropic, but then again, in adulthood, they become more rigid, meaning that our pathways of thinking become very solidified. And again, that can be things about ourselves or about the world around us that we sort of lock into. So if we have a negative belief about ourselves, like me thinking that I can't get through difficult things, that's hard to change in a normal state of consciousness. And so you can think about the mind as like a frozen pond almost. And so if you were to take a new belief in the form of like a pebble or a rock and you drop it on that frozen pond, it doesn't gain entry. But it on psychedelics, our minds become back, they go back to that really flexible or entropic state that we had when we were kids. And so if you now think of that pond, when you're on your brain is now a pond that's thawed, it's no longer frozen when you're on psychedelics. And if you take that rock and try to drop it into the pond now, it gains entry and creates a ripple effect, right? And so that's how psychedelics in a nutshell work to create some of these really profound effects. And I just love that.
I love that too. And it really kind of makes me think, why is this such kind of a still kind of a taboo thing, or there's so much rigidity around it? And I know that there needs to be regulation and what have you, but it does make me feel that with the elevated levels of anxiety, depression, and definitely for women going through menopause, that there isn't easy access to this, where it's easy to access it, to go to a clinic for microdosing, that that's a normal part of self-care. You know, I do start to think, you know, why is it not like this?
I know. Yeah. Well, you know, we went through this period in the 70s and 80s where, and really the 90s too, where there was this war on drugs, and that was started by President Nixon in the US and then continued by the Reagan administration. And, you know, all these psychedelic substances were made illegal. And even though they were gaining a lot of good traction in research back then, there was some erroneous information that got out there and got spread around. And then suddenly those drugs were Schedule I drugs in the US, you know, and so they were made illegal. And that really halted a lot of this, the research, and created a lot of this taboo aspect around these substances. But we're starting to break through those taboos, I think, a little bit as more research progresses and as we're beginning to talk about psychedelics in open circles again and things like that. And I'm really excited about that. I do think we're moving in the right direction in terms of eventually countries, states, cities, decriminalizing and legalizing, especially psilocybin, but also MDMA. And so I think we're moving in that direction. It's just kind of taking a long time, which is annoying.
Yeah. And I think bad press will really enhance the direction that it doesn't need to go, because obviously we're hearing a lot of bad press about general drug use or opioid use and stuff like that. So you, I mean, and you just automatically assume that that is the same category, right?
Right. People get, you know, they lump all drugs together sometimes and that, you know, shouldn't be the case.
Drugs
are bad. Just say no. Right. I mean, I grew up in that era. And so it's, you know, and it was ingrained in me too, but I have done my research and I believe in the science. And so I hope that other people will start to lean into that as well.
Yeah, thanks, Jennifer. I'm looking forward to reading more of your book. I've actually just only read the first chapter because the book's coming. It's actually on the way. So that's exciting. I know that my daughter is going to particularly love this episode. She's 18. She's studying psychology. And she has often spoken to me about the power of psychedelics, not from personal experience. She's been very open. But she feels that our society needs to change direction because she has personally experienced anxiety and sought treatment for it. And then just her own personal experience was to look at what other ways she could support herself and her self-care as she goes through university or as an adult. And she believes that in time that this will be a normal part of daily life, that people can, you know, access these kind of treatments. So I don't even know if we want to call them treatments. I've got some questions for you.
Go for it.
Does psilocybin affect women differently? Like, under what circumstances would you be a great candidate, and what circumstances would you probably, you know, avoid it?
Yeah, so to answer that question about safety, certainly clinical trials are ongoing right now, and researchers have created a framework of like who is excluded from participating in a clinical trial. And so that was the safety information that I provided in the book in terms of like what conditions exclude someone. And so those are things like, extreme mental health conditions or personality disorders, or like bipolar or borderline personality disorder would be a personality disorder. So some of those can exclude you from participating in a clinical trial. And so for that reason, if you have any of those conditions, I definitely would want you to consider talking to a psychedelic assisted therapist or someone in the medical field before you, take it upon yourself to go do a journey. And same thing, there are certain medications that people should, potentially either abstain from psychedelics with, or they could potentially taper off their medications with the help of a professional, because I don't want to recommend that anyone quit a medication without consulting their doctor first. But some of those are things like if you're taking an SSRI, often you taper off of that. But we may find that that's not necessary. In fact, research is indicating that if you're just on one SSRI, which is a selective serotonin reuptake inhibitor, that doesn't necessarily have any interaction with psilocybin specifically. So we may move away from this idea of needing to taper, but right now I can't make a recommendation because I'm not a health professional, I'm just a journalist. But that answers some of the safety questions. I would certainly, read the safety chapter in the book to, learn more in depth about that. But in terms of, does psilocybin affect women differently? It's possible. So we don't know the exact answer yet, but there's some indication that our hormones might impact a journey, but also that the journey might impact our hormones. Right. And so, and it's really interesting. So, and the reason for that is, our cycles occur on what's called the hypothalamic pituitary gonadal axis. So the HPG axis. And so what I mean by that is it's a feedback loop. When estrogen raises, it tells another hormone to do this thing and so forth throughout the trajectory of the menstrual cycle. And then it starts all over again. Right. And so that's the menstrual cycle. But then when we use psilocybin, that activates and binds to our serotonin receptors. And that is along what's called the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis. So we've got the HPG axis with the gonads, the ovaries for women. Mm-hmm. And then the HPA axis would be the stress response axis. And so again, when we take psilocybin, that activates that HPA axis. But these axes overlap, of course, with the hypothalamus and the pituitary gland. And so we already know that our stress response can impact our cycle, and our cycle can impact our stress response. So it's not a stretch to think that psilocybin likely impacts our menstrual cycle in some way and vice versa. But what researchers have learned so far, just from doing some case studies with women, is that likely psilocybin can make one's cycle come a little early, And it's, there's some potential that it's re-regulating cycles that have become dysregulated. So in a couple of case studies done out of Johns Hopkins, they learned that two women had their periods come early and that after psilocybin, and then also it re-regulated their periods after a time of dysregulation. And so that's really interesting.
It is
to
interesting.
See that there's that connection. Yeah.
Yeah. So my mind is going overdrive right now. So I'm just making the assumption that the experience or the journey possibly took away some level of stress anxiety, because stress anxiety can affect your menstrual cycle. Mm-hmm. So you've got dysregulation there. And maybe that was a reason. Who knows, right?
But yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. Only two people.
Yeah, it's only two. I'm hearing other anecdotal reports from women. They'll DM me on Instagram, which I'm totally fine with, and tell me like that their cycles came early or something like that. So I'm getting reports of that as well. And the two women in the case study that I was just mentioning, one had premenstrual dysphoric disorder, so PMDD, like extreme premenstrual symptoms. And then the other had polycystic ovarian syndrome, so PCOS for short. And so that was really interesting to think that maybe with certain conditions that affect the menstrual cycle, there's a possibility that psilocybin may help to regulate. Again, we need more research. Yeah. We don't have anything solid on that yet.
Yeah, well, that's really exciting. Yeah, I have talked to people in the past with both of those conditions, and yeah, they are always constantly looking for something that's going to help, because life gets really messy, right, in those situations.
Yeah.
I just want to give a shout out to Nature's Help, the sponsor of the Sexy Aging podcast, because if you are looking for effective natural solutions for symptoms like hot flushes, insomnia, and anxiety, then definitely take a look at the Menopause Collection by Nature's Help. They also have a range of other supplements like Ultra Magnesium, which is formulated to support your active lifestyle. I'm a huge believer in magnesium to support my sleep and relaxation, and since I've been using magnesium, I don't have muscle cramps waking me in the night. Use the code SEXYPOD20 to get 20% off your first order. I'll pop that in the show notes.
We go into something that's a little bit more on the physical side. For example, your endometriosis or menstrual migraines. Other than the mental wellness aspect, physically, how did this affect you?
Yeah. So what was interesting is, again, you know, I get these menstrual migraines, and I noticed that I had kind of a straight several months there after my journey where I didn't get the menstrual migraine. So that was really exciting to me. They did come back after several months, but I'd never had a period of just like not having any before. So I don't know. I mean, I have nothing else to attribute that change in my life to other than the psilocybin. So I'm excited about that. As far as endometriosis, I did have a hysterectomy in 2016. And so ever since then, I've had a lot of relief from some of my endometriosis symptoms. I still have symptoms, but I do feel like there was an improvement after my psilocybin journey. But again, I have no, you know, I can't say that that's for sure the case. It could be the placebo effect happening, that suddenly I just felt like I had less pain or whatever. So I don't know. But one thing that that cropped up in my research was, so the researchers were not specifically studying psilocybin for endometriosis, but they did look to see whether psilocybin has anti-inflammatory effects. And this was really interesting. So endometriosis is, of course, an inflammatory condition. A lot of people think it's a menstrual cycle condition, but it's, you know, it doesn't have to be related to the menstrual cycle at all. But the lesions that endometriosis, the growths and the lesions that it creates, they secrete inflammatory cytokines. So they're just like immune system cells that are very inflammatory. And these researchers took psilocybin extracts and they took human cells. So they did all this work in a lab, not in humans. And they put these four psilocybin extracts on inflammatory or just on human cells, I should say. And it actually downregulated the expression of these pro-inflammatory cytokines, which I found really interesting because, again, endometriosis lesions secrete inflammatory cytokines. So if we have something that can suppress that inflammation, there's possibilities there that it would also help with endometriosis and in suppressing some of the pain signals that go along with those inflammatory markers as well. So again, they were not studying specifically on endometrial growth, but they just used human cells and found that these extracts downregulated those inflammatory cytokines. I see potential there.
Oh, certainly I'm hearing potential too.
Yeah, I hope someone studies it. And so many conditions that affect women are really rooted in inflammation. So there's some potential there.
Well, that's a really great segue into a discussion on menopause. So we know that the dysregulation of hormones that occur during menopause, a natural life stage, is high inflammation in the body, you know, increasing gut problems, joint pain, muscle pain, fatigue, and it's all related to inflammation, right? So as we lose our estrogen, our body becomes more inflamed. So you've mentioned how you can use the magic mushrooms extract to help with some physical, with the cells that increase endometriosis inflammation. Mm-hmm. So what do you know about the potential to help women who are experiencing tough menopause symptoms in the day-to-day, mm-hmm. in their daily lives?
Yeah, that's such a great question. You know, as someone who eventually will go through menopause, I don't know actually where I'm at, because without the menstrual cycle I have a menstrual cycle because I still have one ovary, but it's like, I call it my secret menstrual cycle because I don't have a period.
Yeah.
I just don't know when will it stop? I don't know.
Do you track any other symptoms? Like, just out of curiosity, are you aware of any other symptoms? For example, sleep, skin, headaches, you know, those kind of things. Can you sort of see a bit of a pattern?
I'm seeing a pattern that I'm probably moving towards menopause, because I get hot flashes, I think.
Oh, there you go.
I'm pretty sure that's what I'm experiencing. And I mean, they're not terrible, but I do get them a little bit. And so I think I'm on that trajectory, and I'm probably going to have my anti-Müllerian hormone tested. So if anyone wants to know where they are on the trajectory, you can get your anti-Müllerian hormone tested. You can ask your doctor, or you can order a test online, and, you know, you just send in a sample of blood and then they test it for you. And that will tell you a little bit about what's left in your ovaries in terms of ovarian reserve, like egg reserve, and tell you kind of where you are on the trajectory. So I plan to do that. But to answer your question about menopause and psilocybin, so I did some deep digging, and I would like to talk about three different symptoms related to menopause. So specifically, definitely depression, we'll talk about that, but also sexual dysfunction, I want to talk about that. And then I want to talk about trauma and how that affects menopause. So when people are in menopause, so I'm going to start with the sexual dysfunction topic. So this will surprise you, or maybe it won't, but in 1998, that's when men got a drug for male sexual dysfunction, which of course we all know is Viagra. It's like a household name. Everyone knows
Viagra. Of course
they
got that,
right?
They got that way before we were not part of the picture, right?
We were not part of that picture. So women were largely excluded from early stage clinical trials until the 1990s. And so what ramifications has that had? So again, men got their sexual dysfunction drug in 1998. At that point in time, the medical establishment didn't even have a complete picture of the internal structures of the clitoris. And until that happened in 2005. And so the medical
So true.
Didn't know.
Yeah.
And let alone anyone you were even sleeping with, they didn't know.
Yeah.
So,
so
female,
true.
Female pleasure has really taken a back seat. So, a female urologist studied that and learned about the internal structures of the clitoris. And then it wasn't until 2015 that women got a drug for female sexual dysfunction. And I bet nobody really knows the name of it. You'd have to look it up. I think it's called
I don't know the name
or
of it.
AbbVie, I think it is. But, that's 17 years after men got a drug. So just to talk about that, that creates stigma for women, because women feel like their pleasure doesn't matter, but it really, really does. It matters. It's so important. It's important for health. The World Health Organization talks about how sexual function is so important for overall health. So, sexual dysfunction is a very common symptom in menopause. So it's 40% of people of reproductive age will have sexual dysfunction in terms of the female body. And then when women reach menopause, that figure goes up to 85%. 85% of women in the menopause, transition are experiencing sexual dysfunction. And that's awful.
And they're not even talking about it. They're not even talking about it.
Nobody's talking about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I wanted to find out, does psilocybin help with sex life? And so one of the things that I learned was that female sexual dysfunction obviously can take many forms, but two things are protective of it. I mean, obviously it doesn't guarantee that you're not going to have female sexual dysfunction, but these two things can help. And that is, intimate partner communication, and then also body and improved body image. So intimate partner communication could be something that psilocybin helps facilitate, because we definitely, when you're on psilocybin, even if you're not with your partner, you're probably going to feel more connected to the people in your life, including your partner, you know? So that happened for me. I was off doing my own journey. My husband was at home, and I felt very connected to him, especially after, when I got back home. But, psilocybin is a unifier. It makes you feel connected to people, and in a term called oceanic boundlessness, which is kind of a cool thing. It just means that you're focused less on yourself and you're focused more on these connections that you have in the world. And so I experienced that with those threads of light that I was talking about, threads of light and love. But then the other thing is, psilocybin is being studied for things like eating disorders. So there are certain aspects of an eating disorder that sort of distort body image. And psilocybin is showing promise to help with that, like that distortion, to help fix or adjust that distortion. So, you know, even if you don't have an eating disorder and you have some negative feelings about yourself or a negative body image, that it's possible that psilocybin can really help with that. So again, those two things are protective against sexual dysfunction, meaning if you have a better body image and you have intimate partner communication, that can really help. So I did talk to an expert, and she recommended that if a woman wants to explore with psilocybin, to do a journey solo and do a little self-exploration of your own body, see how everything feels, see what's pleasurable to you. So I thought that was a really good concept. Yeah. And then now I'll talk about the depression aspect of menopause, and also trauma in relation to that as well. So with depression, obviously, that's a huge symptom of menopause, or it can be. It's not, yes, not that everyone's going to have that, but it's certainly a huge thing.
Yeah, it's more prevalent than people realize. So yeah.
Yeah, it really is. And it's super prevalent in people who've never even had depression before, yeah, or haven't had like long bouts of depression. And so so it's something that can definitely crop up. And the first thing your doctor is going to throw at you is a selective serotonin reuptake inhibitor, an SSRI. Mm-hmm. I have nothing against SSRIs. They work really well for a lot of people, and they're necessary medications. However, you may want to try something different first, and psilocybin might be a viable option. So SSRIs, we need to consider, they blunt our mood. That's how they work for depression. But not only are they blunting your lows, they're also blunting your highs. And so, yeah. And we all love to have enjoyment in our lives. So when that's blunted, what effect does that have on us? You know, again, SSRIs are not a bad thing. It's just that they do blunt. And whereas psilocybin, it activates those serotonin receptors as well, but it doesn't do any blunting. And so you could do a psilocybin journey perhaps, and have a reduction in depression, or it might be that you microdose. There's, microdosing, yeah, protocols out there. Microdosing just means taking a very small amount of psilocybin at regular intervals. And usually you don't, when you microdose, you don't have those like psychedelic effects. Like, you're not going to see like wavy lines and things like that, or geometric patterns, or when I did my psilocybin journey, the couch was like
pulsing. Yeah.
Like, you're not supposed to be breathing, couch. Are you alive? So, wow. So anyway, you wouldn't have that while microdosing. But so that was really interesting regarding depression. And then the other thing I wanted to talk about was trauma. So this is a weird thing. If you've had adverse childhood experiences, which are called ACEs for short, that can affect your menopause symptoms. It yes, turns out that people who've had people who've had four or more ACEs are more likely to have difficulty in menopause with the symptoms.
Correct.
And so ACEs, just to give everyone kind of a little bit of background, are any adverse childhood experience. So it could be surviving a tornado. It could be your parents got divorced. It could be abuse in the family, or illness as a child, like I had. So that's one of my ACEs. And that's just really interesting that ACEs can somehow affect menopause. And, I wondered about the mechanisms there. And I just happened to have done some research on menopause and metabolic health, so your blood sugar regulation and all of that stuff. And it turns out that ACEs can also worsen your metabolic health, and then metabolic health can also worsen your menopause experience. So correct. I'm guessing that's the, I mean, again, I have no solid studies connecting all three of those things, but I definitely, there are solid studies connecting ACEs with problems in menopause. And so I'm thinking that a possible mechanism is the worsening metabolic health. So focusing on those ACEs, what if we're using psilocybin to help heal unresolved trauma? I'm not saying that we're going to automatically heal all of our ACEs, but we are able on psilocybin to look at trauma in a different way. There's a term that researchers came up with, and a woman by the name of Abigail Calder presented this to me. She and a colleague had done some research on this, but there's something called the helioscope effect. So a helioscope is a mechanism for like looking at the sun, because we can't stare directly at the sun, right? So we'll think of the sun, even though this sounds weird, think of the sun as your trauma. In normal states of consciousness, it's really hard to look directly at your trauma. It's scary, it's triggering. But on psychedelics, it's like you're looking through this helioscope, and you can view trauma at a safe distance without getting burned by that trauma, is the way she described it. And I loved that analogy as well, because it's true. When you're on psychedelics, you're able to look at trauma without being triggered. You can reevaluate it. You can understand it a little bit more. And then you continue that understanding and the insights that you gained, you continue that outside of your journey later on, you know? Yeah. So I do see a lot of potential for psilocybin to help people in menopause with various symptoms, especially the depression or trauma or sexual dysfunction.
Yeah, this is so fascinating, this discussion. I feel like I could talk on and on to you about this, because I am really quite deeply invested in this conversation. But I have one last question for you.
Sure.
So I'm here in New Zealand. We're not really hearing a lot about the opportunity to use psychedelics to help women in midlife and menopause. What's the current status of access and prescription in the US? Because I do know that there are certain states that have these clinics that you can go to and you can get your treatment plan, your microdosing plan. So how do people actually access this?
Yeah, so again, as you were just describing, it's sort of a patchwork of laws out there. And so it can get really confusing. So I don't know the laws in New Zealand off the top of my head. But in the United States, psilocybin and MDMA are still not FDA approved treatments yet by the Food and Drug Administration. And they're also, again, Schedule I substances, meaning that they're illegal federally. However, we've got certain states that have legalized or decriminalized psilocybin or MDMA. I guess I'm not sure what the status of MDMA is, so I'll just focus on psilocybin. But there are some states that have decriminalized and legalized the use of psilocybin, especially in specific contexts. And so that might be psychedelic assisted therapy. So so access is still really difficult in many ways in terms of doing it with a licensed practitioner, but that will be growing over the next few years for sure, where people will have more access. So again, you mentioned Oregon is a state, and Colorado is a state where, you know, the access is gaining a lot more traction. And then again, there are cities that have just decriminalized the use. And so you can access your own you can get a personal supply of psilocybin, and it's not, you know, the cops aren't going to come knock down your door, you know? So access is something that we really need to work on. I hired a guide, like a very skilled psilocybin guide. He's an Indigenous person. And so he had a lot of background in that, which I think is also really important for us to consider when we're talking about psychedelic substances, especially psilocybin, because it's rooted in Indigenous cultures. Mm-hmm. That's where the use first came about. And then, you know, eventually it became into mainstream Western science, which is a whole story that I won't get into. So I hired what would be considered an underground guide, because, you know, he's not a licensed healthcare practitioner and whatnot. And we met at a cabin in the woods. I'm not suggesting people go out and break laws, but if you find that you really need to try this, in some ways, there are ways to do it. That's all I can say about that, you know, legally.
Yeah, of course. I mean, I think that there's an opportunity with it, actually. And the faster that we can accelerate those studies and get some really good context, then it just gives another piece of the toolkit to help people that are experiencing pain, trauma. Even transitioning through menopause can be extremely difficult for, for women. I mean, we know that women in menopause between the age of 45 and 55 is the highest, the data has shown us the highest time for a woman to commit suicide. So yeah, it's just, there's a lot of impact on that, those changes of hormones and whether we can use psilocybin as a tool to support. So, hey, thank you so much, Jennifer. This was absolutely fascinating. I can already see my blurb post for this podcast saying, I can't say the word psilocybin.
I love it.
So I'm going to use the words magic mushroom. Yeah, I can already
see it. Magic mushroom. Yes. Thank you so much for having me. What a blast to talk about all of these things.
Yeah. And I'll pop your details in the show notes so that people can find your book and access you online.
Wonderful. I really appreciate it. Thanks again.
Thank you. Thanks for listening to today's episode. I'd love to hear what you thought, so feel free to answer in the questions in Spotify or give your feedback in Apple Podcasts, and follow the podcast so you'll receive notifications for new episodes. And stay sexy.